Welcome to Modcast, a Civilization podcast focused on game modding. Rob, R8XFT.
Keith Angolan.
Jan Boruta.
Alpha Shard.
Welcome to Modcast number 64. With me, Rob, R8XFT, and...
Jan Boruta.
Keith Angolan.
Secret Act.
Alpha Shard.
And...
Nurai the Forgiven. I did listen to the previous modcast that I was on, and all of the civs that we mentioned that were going to come out in that, and we mentioned a lot of upcoming First Nation civs, they all have come out except for the Salish.
Mm.
What was really amusing, if you go back and listen to that one, is that our description of the Wabanaki has nothing to do with the current release mod at all. There's no similarity. So I don't want to announce that we're going to be building four civs in Australia by 2017, and only to come up and find out that Civ 6 was announced tomorrow, and now none of this is happening because we're upgrading our existing civs to Civ 6.
Okay. Let's say Civ 6 was announced tomorrow then. Which of your First Nation civs do you create first for Civ 6?
Number one, first one? Cree.
Yeah. The Cree.
After that, then it becomes a question as whether we do the Dene, or the Wabanaki, or the Blackfoot.
Same question for you then, Secret. Which of your civs do you think you would produce first if Civ 6 was announced tomorrow?
I'm feeling it'd be the Yam, because I have a feeling the Yam will be coming back in Civ 6. I'm going to be very sad about that.
Yeah.
Very possible.
Definitely Australia, Vietnam, and Canada. Our original sort of four, including Mexico, would be good to add to the game as soon as we can.
I forgot about the Inuit. Yeah, that's actually really embarrassing.
Oh, God, yeah, the Inuit. Oh, man. Yeah.
Update the Cree.
Sorry.
Because the Huns use the city list, and it's really disconcerting.
Yeah.
I thought we fixed that bug ages ago, didn't we?
No, it's still there.
Yeah, so did we, and then it's now still there. I know why.
Oh, right. Okay. Did you give me a patch for that or something that I just forgot to upload?
Something like that.
I think that's the case. I'm terrible. I'm so sorry.
Wow. Patch show today. Welcome back, Sikta and Narai. We spoke with you last year, and both of you have had some projects on since then. Sikta, you've recently published Zimbabwe. So why Zimbabwe, and what's the thought behind that?
Honestly, more very recently, I've been much more interested in Africa, because my boyfriend has been introducing me to civilizations in the area, so I've been very interested in the region. And, like, Zimbabwe is obviously, like, one of the big ones, because among ones that, like, major well-known civilizations, they conform to the Western standard of, like, being a building civilization as opposed to, like, nomadic or tribal or anything of the sort.
They're more sedentary than anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You think of grand African kingdoms, you definitely think of Zimbabwe first, or the Congo. More so Zimbabwe because of their actual settlements and the archaeological sort of things that you can draw from that.
Yeah, they stand out from the rest of South Africa.
They're very much unlike the rest of the Bantu tribes in the region. So, like, they're obviously very different from the Zulu or the Maasai.
For sure.
Right, yeah.
So what's the mechanics with Zimbabwe then?
Basically, everything about them is focused around this concept of, like, growth and building.
Okay.
Their UA is semi-clinage. Spending production on buildings and wonders contributes towards the establishment of a new clan lineage when the building is completed. Each clan lineage has a trade slot and bonus that you can choose.
So it looks kind of like a bonus set of policies.
Yes, it is.
That you get because they contribute a permanent bonus across the game.
Yes, since it is a set of extra policies you can get from, like, spending production on structures. A lot of the bonuses themselves are geared towards either trade or growth as well. So, like, there's one that gives bonus production towards building more buildings and wonders. There's one that gives +2 food per city. There's one that gives a bunch of extra stuff for every wonder. And there's also stuff that helps them towards trade, because it was also a thing. There were a major trading state in the region. So they also have stuff like extra gold from trade routes.
It's a really cool way of doing a mechanic. You know, I've seen civilizations before where they may have an extra social policy tree, and then it's kind of like, Okay, I got to choose between this or this. What you've done is made policies
it's kind of like the Shang.
Yeah.
So when designing this civilization, did you just find such a wealth of information that you say, I don't want to like isolate anything, I should probably want to just represent absolutely everything about it? How did you go about designing it?
It doesn't represent the modern Zimbabwe.
No, it doesn't, no. The original idea for the totemic thing was like, Reed still came up with a design which I drew a lot of inspiration from. His original design brought up the fact that the Shona people, which were the people who built Great Zimbabwe and all the associated kingdoms, they have this system of basically everyone in their culture belongs to a clan. And each clan is represented by a specific symbol or animal, so like buffaloes, elephants, fish, and so forth. And essentially it started with the idea of, okay, it was going to be a bonus based off terrain or based off resources, but I felt like there was like sort of overdone.
Yeah, you have the Gia, which has their extra social policy things, but then we did the Cree, which is kind of similar in that regard, which we have so many different types of subcultures within this larger culture that you want to represent, but you don't want to skip over. And you're right, yeah, terrain has kind of been overdone in that sort of sense. That's what we did for the Cree. Depending on their terrain, they got new bonuses.
My next work in progress, I'm pretty excited about this, the Damatians, the guys who built Petra.
Oh, nice.
Oh.
Adapted from Hiram, I think.
Yeah.
Because he left a lot of his stuff to Morsifs, some to some other people, so I think Secret Act just took to Nebati.
I sort of like to snatch them up. And so on the lower guy. I was pretty excited about this. I watched a documentary about them. People who lived in a desert had a very surprisingly complex system of hydraulics.
Yes.
And kept their water sources really well hidden. What I'm really excited about is the UA, because for once it's a UA that's really simple, but still at the same time it sounds very unique. I sort of drew inspiration from the Broken Lords in Endless Legends. Their UA is simply, you can spend gold to permanently increase food yield in any city by +2.
Oh.
So you send the trade routes, get rich, and buy food, essentially.
Cities in the middle of the desert would like, oh, we have no farms, but hey look, gigantic city.
Wow.
That's pretty cool.
It's surprising to a lot of modders that there is a community outside of the modding and creating customization section on Sith Fanatics. That, you know, there's an entire general discussions board and ideas and suggestions and a whole massive other world. It's a brave new world.
I never go there.
Yeah, exactly. And I was perusing there the other day, and I found lots of posts saying, okay, what's a dark horse civilization that you would like in this game? You know, we can talk about Australia, we can talk about any of the Native American civilizations. And inside of the modern community, you have the fact that we don't care how big the civilization is or how small it is. If we're looking at a chiefdom level, if we're looking at like a tribal level, or if we're looking at a conglomeration of tribes or a confederacy, all the way up to nation states and entire countries, there's no discrimination pretty much in the modern community whether or not something should be made into a civ.
Everything gets made.
Everything should get made because these are stories that deserve to be told. But outside of the community, I found lots and lots of people talking about the fact that civilization has a very direct definition and it's almost an abomination that you would include countries or civilizations or cultures or peoples like the Shoshone or the Iroquois or anything else like that. So what I hope going onward is that civilization kind of changes their own definition of civilization to include more peoples and stories that people should more be aware of, I guess.
Obviously, at this point in time, Civilization V, cities are the building block of the game, and I think that shapes a lot of Firaxis' view of here's what a civilization is, it's cities.
I feel like this topic was brought up on Polycast, and they pointed out that you would be at a disadvantage because I don't think you would be able to compete with the bigger civs that are growing empires and taking up the land. And
it's not as if other games haven't set that precedent before. There have been other 4X games in which you do have a nomadic sort of civilization, and they are just as balanced as everybody else. The other big sort of question, essentially, is that if you do have a nomadic civilization in a future or in this game, do you have it where they eventually settle down? Does civilization ascribe to this whole sort of notion of the forward march of progress that in order to be civilized you need to stay in one particular place at one particular time? I mean, it's something that definitely, hopefully, they've considered.
With that, I think balancing would be possible, but I can see the problems of, for example, science victory where you have to build a spaceship. So you can't build a spaceship when you don't have a city and don't have a facility and you are nomadic, you don't build anything. So either you would have to steal the spaceship or something like that.
I like that idea.
Yep. But
just stealing a spaceship.
If you have a semi-realistic game about semi-realistic world history, then you have to have a city to get more progress.
For Axis, when they're creating Civ 5, that something like that would be so specialised it would be very difficult to learn. So they wanted all the Civs to be Civs that people could attach themselves to and actually play and learn how to play the game. So only later on, when they've got used to playing the game and modders can come in and do a nomadic Civ, that it's, you know, it's possible, I think.
Yeah, the concept of a nomadic Civ would be good if something like of an emergent Civ would be there. So you start as nomads and you start building your civilization from there. You don't have a city anywhere and you have to choose, adapt everything, you know. Simulate going from even the earlier stage of then settling the first city.
Yeah.
Then your civilization adapts and gets bonuses because of the actions you take and not because of the social policy you choose.
Right. Suggest that Civ gets some sort of bonuses the longer it stays in a nomadic state, but then at some point must settle down.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would be unreasonable not to settle at some point.
There is a point at which being nomadic does stop you from having the level of progress and production that you need in order to be a world player.
Well, that's because as a nomad, you're always going to just be a local player, aren't you?
Yeah.
Wherever you are at that point, you're not going to be a global player.
I mean, it's just like who you are, though. That's just like your way of life.
For sure, but it doesn't make for exciting endgame in a 4X game, because you kind of do two of the X's and then you stop.
But it does say something about a lot of the Firaxis designs. I hope that they try to just not rely on modders to make the game interesting and that they just try to play it safe.
You would have to not only rebuild your engine, you'd have to redesign the game so that there was that design space, and then you'd have to rebuild the engine for that new design. It would be a colossal undertaking.
Yeah.
That hasn't stopped modders from coming up with something that mildly interesting, though. I'm not trying to drag Firaxis through the modders, you know, we're not, but it's interesting that a lot of the Civ designs are just very sort of stagnant in their own special way.
I think it's because when Firaxis are actually creating a game, I think they've got to say, right, what would everybody recognise about Rome? So they're going to put in things about Rome that people recognise. It might not necessarily fit together. Whereas somebody that is from the community that has a real interest in a particular civilization is going to say, aha, now we know that this is already going to be obscure. So we're not going for what's well known. We're going for something that's associated with that civilization that actually will work together. So there will be some synergy. And that's the area we go from.
And that's a massive part.
It is, because if you think about your own creations, then, Narai, you know, with the first people, with all due respect, they're not going to be well known. So you can kind of be a little bit flexible with the information that you've got and work out what is the best thing for them. And whatever you choose, it'll be something new to most people. Whereas with somebody like Rome, Egypt, and all the really well-known ones, it's almost decided for them what they're going to actually choose, I think.
I don't know. I think the thing really is the fact that they're designing so many Civs at once and on a limited time scale. I think it's a major factor in why they feel so somewhat bland.
I don't necessarily disagree with you, but if you think about it, you guys in more Civs, Colonial Legacies, if you were told, right, you've got a time scale of a year to bring out 9 Civs, I think you could come up with 9 Civs that were pretty well-rounded in that time.
But if you're designing it from scratch, though, I mean, I can understand why vanilla civilizations are so seemingly vanilla, because you have to design 20 or so civilizations inside of the space of a year. You're only kind of basing them off the base game mechanics. I mean, expansions would make better sounding and better looking Civs, obviously, because you can compare them. Yeah, but there also you can have things like France, where that was changed because of new things that went along, and I just kind of wish that Firaxis did things that weren't just France, that gave them an extra chateau or gave them, you know, something that wasn't a foreign legion. It was just a nice sort of thing that they updated previous Civs to be more in line with the expansion properties without sort of killing off what they were beforehand.
I want to point out two things. First, I would say that the number one thing that Firaxis is looking for when designing a civilization is that that design is rock solid, in the sense that we could build the Wabanaki in Cuba, we build some pretty revolutionary, groundbreaking Lua scripts in there that I'm not 100% sure will survive a playthrough because of how gimmicky they are and how untested they are. And if you're building a game that you want to sell for the market, you really don't want to go there. So being able to get it done and make sure that it's going to work every single time and it doesn't require a lot of crossing your fingers and praying.
Yeah, it makes you lowball the situation.
I'm really surprised, by the way, that both the Wabanaki and Cuba, where they have had bugs, they haven't been in the areas where we did crazy stunts with Lua. The other side of that is that we're definitely working in what I would consider to be a growing area of restricted design space. So when Phyraxis starts, there's nothing, and they can just plot things as close to the middle of, would this be cool? Yeah, this would be cool. It would be cool because nobody's ever done this before. And they don't necessarily think, let's go out to the outer rim and drop pegs. We're exploring the outer rim of weird designs and strange ideas because, at this point, we're sitting here and half of our design discussions are, hey, I came up with this cool idea. You can't do that because Secret's already done it, or because JFD's already done it, or Last Sword. You can do it if Last Sword's done it, because Last Sword is generous that way and has sort of a different philosophy of design than the rest of us do. But I think the biggest problem that we're going to face that's going to actually end Civ modding as we know it is going to be that within the next year, we are going to run out of colors.
It's the impending doom.
Soon there will just be no colors left, and we'll just have to invent ones and train people to be able to see them.
You can imagine if there is another Civ, what sort of mods they could take some inspiration off that should be there right from the start.
One of my favorite things about mods and about just civilizations are the flavor that you include in it, whether it just be spy lists or your unique sort of music that you choose, which I think is very important, alongside, you know, of course, the color scheme. But I really, really hope that whatever they do for Civ 6 makes the game feel kind of like you're actually playing something as opposed to a generic template. To go over just individually what the worst case scenario for Civ 6 modding is, the best case scenario, and probably the middle ground of what's actually going to happen. Does anyone ever have like a worst case scenario of how they could just screw it up just monumentally?
One, all the art is only in 3D.
Oh.
Ooh. Oh, screw that, yeah.
If it was 3D, and it did take extra time, for modders that rely on people like yourself to actually create leaderheads, there's going to be less leaderheads around because you're not going to have that time to do it. And likewise, if they go back to having four eras like they did in Civ 3, well, again, somebody asking you to create a leaderhead, for example, for France, it's not so bad if you just have to do one image.
Right.
But if you're going to have to do more than one image, then, you know, it's going to take quite a bit of time, I would think. And that could hurt the modding community in some respects, purely because there's not the time to for specialist people, such as Jan, to do quite as many of the leaderheads as we've been able to do recently.
And we're already in that situation with unit models.
Mm.
There's only so many people who are doing those.
Mm.
You're right.
You know, we've had fully completed Civ sitting on the shelf for over a year, waiting for a 3D unit model to show up.
I think that's the big loss of Civ 5, the units. I've said it for quite a while.
What's crazy about that is if you look at Steam Workshop and you look at various different mod communities, I'll just pick on Skyrim, XCOM, and I'm trying to think of a shooter and I'm blanking so I'm not going to go there, but 3D modelers, yeah, okay, Fallout, 3D modelers are a dime a dozen. You get, you know, 100 mods a day that have new 3D models in them. But in our community, there are three, maybe four people that are building 3D models.
Yeah, but it's curious because there was a slew of people doing 3D stuff for Civ 3 and Civ 4.
Specific reason for Civ 3 is that you could use certain tools and certain packages to do the units, so you could do them in various different formats that you can't do in Civ 4 or 5. That was the reason for the carryover.
Yeah, the leader animations were really simple, and in Civ 4 you could snap any model to them.
Yeah, well, you met so many Caesars, didn't you? So many.
There's essentially no way to make 3D models. It's really reliant on third-party tools.
Yeah, it's all like hacking the game more than modding.
The best case would be them to give us some sort of 3D modeling tool where you could take a model and say, oh, well, give them this weapon, give them this hat, and just kind of put together kind of like a cobbling together tool, because I think
God, there's going to be so many bad Steam Workshop mods in that case. Like, just like every single female leader now has mustaches, you know.
Or, you know, slutty body tapes like in Fallout.
Oh no, just they're going to be like naked mods all over Nexus, so it's not going to be good.
Right, but we self-police, right?
The ominous silence.
Wherein I would say a golden age of modding in terms of Lua capabilities, just as shared knowledge between various different modders, whether it's Last Sword, whether it's more civs, or, you know, myself trying crazy ideas, we've been able to conquer the wall of you can't ever find out who's attacking another unit and which units are involved in this fight with any sort of reliability. We have the test Lua abilities that Tomatech really championed at first, and they let you control a lot of the various different aspects of the game, whether it's saying, yes, you can or you can't build a building at this time. You can actually branch upgrade paths on units, you know, those kind of things. But one of the things that I would really love to see in the game, and I really hope future Civilization games would consider putting this in, would be the element of being able to use your Lua to, or even any other language, to update the game database in the middle of the game with new content or new cursors. So, for example, what if we decided that if the game had kind of grown stale and maybe a team had been eliminated from the game, a new team could be put in place of a city-state. We just say, that city-state is now this team. Which would be very interesting if you could have an upgrade path so that you could say, I've got a European city-state here that's a French city, and bam, now they're France. Or, as a more interesting idea, changing leaders in the middle of a game.
Hmm.
These sort of elements are all potentially possible if you could upgrade the database in the middle of the game. It is possible to do it now, Last Sword's done it, but really at the beginning of a game, during the loading screen time, there is a point at which the game will commit the database, if that makes sense. So at that point, and under certain events, you can actually put data into the game database. But typically you can't. And this is done somewhat on purpose because of the mechanics of how the game works, and it's very easy to mess it up if you can put data into the game. But at the same time, I think careful modders can do that.
So is that kind of what you want to see out of Civ 6?
I think I would love to see it in Civ 6. It's not a huge priority for me, but yeah, it is one of the things that I think would be pretty cool.
Might make more it easier to test certain things as well, right, if you could do that. Because if you're modding and you've got, I don't know, a particular unit that's usable in the middle of the game, it'd be great to not have to go back a few steps and build it again to be able to load in your changes and see if that works.
Yeah, okay, so that's the other major practicality, is having a refresh button. If you went into, say, modding or console or debug mode, where you can just recycle the database and say, load up all the things that I have so far, like show me another loading screen, but that's it. I just need to sit here for 2 minutes or 10 minutes, and bam, all the changes are made. Yes, that might have the effect of breaking some things. If you know the risks, if you're playing in debug or modding console mode, that would really cut down the amount of time that is involved in testing sips. When I started, I really didn't like to mod and test using anything like in-game editor or something like that, because I felt that that meant I could circumvent any glitches that I had created along the way. But now, for the auspices of time, if I didn't want to take 3 months to test every sieve that we put out, I typically use...
Yeah, we're professional. We have deadlines.
Oh, I have deadlines, man. And kids. That works together quite well. I think that the big worst-case scenario is, what happens if they produce Civ 6 with a whole bunch of additional hard-coded elements? A lot of Beyond Earth was programmed with some sort of proprietary code, and if Civilization 6 has a lot of elements that are proprietary code and you can't change them, it's going to put a nail in the coffin for Civ 6 right out the front door. And Beyond Earth has struggled to have a mod community. It's the people that are working on it. But I think a huge part of that, at least for me, was they had this new game. It had these new structures. I was super interested in ideologies. I was not interested in producing more Civs for Beyond Earth. And you just could not. There wasn't a way. It's possible that the combined force of all of the code monkeys in the Civ Fanatics team, if we cared to, could crack that open and actually go somewhere with it. But the amount of work that it would take, let's say it would take us 2 years to crack the thing open, versus in that time we could produce 40 mods for Civ 5, so we did.
Yeah, well, if such a worst-case scenario happens and we can do cool mods for Civ 6, we just stay with Civ 5. It's a good game and it will stay a good game.
And that's what will happen. But the problem with that is, will that result in an alienation of the community, a further alienation from Firaxis, if all of a sudden we're actually slashing the tires of Civ 6 as it's coming out, so to speak, because instead of saying, hey guys, there's all this new cool stuff we can do with Civ 6, and we're going to be producing more awesome mods for Civ 6, and it's easier and it's faster, so you can expect us to have more mods coming out. Or even if it's harder, but it's better, and there's more depth, and there's baked in events and decisions, and there's
so
other new things, then...
baked in?
If Civ 6 is better / easier to mod, or has more moddable components, actual support for that sort of thing, I would be definitely in favor of switching, because I always want to work with the newest things possible.
Yeah.
But
this is exactly what I was going to say, actually. When you look at Civilization iterations going back, where were you guys when Civ 4 came out, or Civ 3? Where are the Civ 4 people? They're not certainly working on Civ 5, or most of them aren't. They stayed at Civ 4. And likewise for Civ 3 people and Civ 2 before them. So I would like to see a Civ which engages the current community on Civ 5 and makes them want to work on it, because I think it's a really good creative community that we've got, and we know who's got the skills, so right out of the box we know potentially which people might have a chance of being able to do certain things. You see what I mean?
Look, I'm pretty much just going to like put it out there. I'm just going to say that as soon as mechanics and as soon as information is released about Civ 6, it's going to be an absolute shit show in the Civ 5 modding community in an absolute good way, because the rivalry isn't in Civilization 5 isn't anywhere, even though we've had our own dramas and stuff. The rivalry in Civilization 5 is more friendly. When Beyond Earth came out, as soon as we figured out all of the mechanics, Morse's, JFD, Last Sword, Colonius Legacies all started modding the game before it was released. Right. And that's just the way things were happening. I'm absolutely predicting it. As soon as Civ 6 comes out, everyone in the Civ 5 community is going to pre-order Civ 6 and is going to try to do stuff and mod stuff and prepare so that as soon as on release day, we have something to not just release, but something to work hard towards. I mean, JFD's going to have something out within 2 days and we're going to like scorn. But, you know, the rest of us that are actually human beings, I'm saying he's more than human, not just, you know, separate from the rest of us.
He's augmented.
I think that we're all just going to clamor towards Civ 6. All of us are just going to, like, fight tooth and nail releasing stuff probably within the first week or two.
Well, you can bet on me trying to emulate Civ 6 art style when it's announced. Just to see if I can do that and if old stuff is translatable into Civ 6. Because it would be cool if some of the Civ 5 stuff we've done could be in art style transferred and translated into Civ 6.
If you think about the leader screens currently cover the whole screen, don't they? So even if they're just part of a screen, you can grab the relevant part.
Yeah. My only concern in this regard is that Civ 6 might upscale the leaders a bit, that it's more HD, the base resolution is larger, because right now the leader screens we are making are 1600 by 900, the perfect 16:9 ratio.
Oh, I see what you mean, yeah.
But if they are slightly bigger, we'll have to upscale them or redo them so they are not blurred or pixely and stand out as worse.
Yeah.
Right.
Because if you do that with Civ 4 leaders into Civ 5, you can definitely see the difference.
Yes.
So I'm afraid this might be the case for Civ 6, that they upscale the leaders once more. So the most time-consuming stuff we are doing right now in arts department will have to be redone.
I think that Brave New World, in its current iteration, it's a timeless-looking game. It is an absolutely beautiful piece and work of art. Each civilization looks completely different from the last. I have no idea, and I'm really apprehensive about what they're going to do for Civ 6.
Two worst-case scenarios. If you looked at, say, Beyond Earth, when you were in diplomacy, they just had the leader cutout and no background superimposed over the screen. A 2D image could very easily feel a lot worse, even for the good ones.
Yeah.
But it's because you don't have a background to say...
You don't have this context from where he's from,
labor,
who he is. Just,
the labor of being is all on the unit model.
One of my favorite leader screens is the Scottish leader screen, not the JFD Scotland, the Morse Scotland. And I find that absolutely fantastic because, you know, you have the wind sort of ambience and these bagpipes and his imposing look and he's on top of the castle and there's a lock behind him and mountains and you're just like, man, this looks fantastic. And you hope that they have backgrounds.
Yeah, this is the kind of environmental storytelling that does a hell of a job because you can design the leader in every way you can imagine, but you have to think of the picture as a whole, as an art piece, that you have to tell everything. Not only through the leader, you have to have a background, you have to read up on it. Do we have any more what could go wrong? What could possibly go wrong with Civ 6 in relation to modding?
Not enough API. Brave New World, we're like, oh, I want to do this stuff with trade routes, but oops, no you can't.
Yep, yeah, that's definitely a case.
I think just within the game, I don't want to come across this thing where leaders feel the need to keep talking to me. You know, when you bump into one person, you say, oh, yes, I see you've become friends of Germany. I've been friends with them. And they bump into Germany and say, oh, yes, I see you've been friends with France, because I know France, I'm friends with them. You think, you know it's coming. Do you know what I mean?
Turn the chattiness into a notification, and it's all good.
Yeah, turn the chattiness into a notification, or in the other sense, actually make your answers to what they're going to say mean something.
Right. Yeah.
Yes, I would actually say Civ 5 is a great game as a mod platform. It's a great game as a solid game. You don't really think that the game's going to fall apart in coming playing it, and it's really rock solid that way. But I do think it's a less fun game than, say, Civilization 4. One of the major reasons for that is that the diplomacy system is really terrible. Even with things like the Civ 4 diplomacy mod for Civ 5 makes it a lot better. But there's definitely a lot of room for diplomacy being a lot more fleshed out in a future release. I would take less civilizations in the base game, because we can always mod and add more, right? Exchange for much more diplomacy.
I wouldn't make that trade, I'd just say I want more diplomacy.
But for the record, that's my...
Yes.
I think the most disappointing part for modding is the World Council. Personally, I think the World Council is one of my most disappointing parts of Brave New World in general, because I think it's very sparse.
There's a lot you can
but
do with it.
If you can mod better with it and add all sorts of things to it, that'd be great. But so far, I haven't seen a way to do that at all, besides adding delegates.
Well, there were some new resolutions added. JFD added some resolutions in citizen development recently. But resolutions are pretty much the only thing you can do with it.
It's one of those things in which, you know, they say it's going to be the most moddable Civ ever. It turns out to be the absolute monumental opposite. And you just kind of, going into Civ 6, you have to wonder if they're going to realize that a lot of the longevity towards Civilization, there's a reason that it's consistently in the top 10 most played games on Steam since release. Part of that definitely has to do with the ongoing modding community and what mods can do for people. If they try to integrate themselves a lot more with the modding community, I feel like we're going to have this amazing renaissance of mods and alongside the developers and the developers actually having a dialogue with modders as opposed to being so separate. I mean, we often hear that developers look at mods all the time, but in other communities you have modders and developers having frequent dialogues and panels and things in which they are celebrated in their communities. Wouldn't that be fantastic? I don't know. I just feel like because of the modding tools and the modding accessibility is so low for Civilization 5, the modding community is so monumentally tiny for something so monumentally large. And I'm saying monumentally large because I usually stick myself in hyperboles, but in this case, you don't need to. You can say these things because it's just that Firaxis needs to embrace this. It's a labor of love that feels like it's not getting enough recognition when it definitely should.
Well, it seems they have embraced it with XCOM 2.
Right.
Mods for it are popping left and right now, so there's a little bit of hoping that this could occur when Civ 6 is out.
I think the actual phrase should be, it is the most moddable Civ ever, if you've got the skills to do it.
Yeah.
So if you look at what several people have done, there's been an amazing things that people have done. I couldn't do it, I just don't have the skills. So for me, it's not necessarily that moddable, or it's becoming more moddable as I'm learning, but it is if you've got the skills, I think, and the desire, and the creativity.
It's interesting when you look at fandom communities, so when it comes to TV shows or movies or games, there's like the consumption fan bases and there's the maker fan bases. One of them likes to discuss things and one of them likes to come up with ideas of how to make the show better or the game better, and they like to discuss.
Right.
But the other side, they really like to show off what content that they've made. And it seems like Civ 5 embraced the side of things where people discussed ideas as opposed to creating content for the game. It just feels like civilization has this potential that is being wasted, essentially. The rate in which content is produced outside of it that isn't from a marketing team is pretty low, which is a bit sad.
Although, the more you embrace your fans, the more you create expectations, even personally. And you know this is in the Civ Battle Royale. I know this personally in modding. The more I interact with people who like my mods, the more they expect me to make their favorite mod or fix bugs. Oops, did I say that? Because they're on me. To update the Kree. I get on Modcast, I'm on it for 5 minutes, and Yan is suddenly wants me to update the Kree.
Should have been
humor aside,
launch,
though, that does happen. It should have been fixed at launch, bro. Yeah, that does happen, though. The more you interact, you know, if Sid Meier's was on this show right now, all of these things that we'd be talking about, there would be some more of a demand to say, well, you've really got to do this with Civ 6, regardless of whether he's even in the position to make that call.
Yeah. But I do think that the modding community does need to at least somewhat put a concerted effort towards promotion and not be so insular and be more accepting to more people. I'm not sure what the best way forward is, but it feels like this community can be so much larger if the promotion is there.
Well, the question is, do we want to be much larger? Because right now we have the comfort of not being under pressure from a lot of people that expect mods to be done right now.
Mm.
Because they are so entitled to have those mods.
Without bugs.
Yes, yes.
Don't read this negatively, but some of our members are insular. Not all of us want to have people logging in to watch us do our thing.
I really don't like tarnishing Firaxis's name, but I'm doing so out of love, I guess. When you set the bar so low, it's kind of like any sort of improvement, it just feels like it's just so needed. We live in this information era where cutting yourself off from your fan base kind of rubs people the wrong way, and actually being involved with the community, I don't know, maybe it's AAA game, so it's completely different, but Firaxis really needs to embrace their fan community.
Keeping in touch with the fans would be relatively low cost for Firaxis, I think, because right now they are pouring, I think, more money into YouTube coverage and Twitch coverage.
Right.
That ultimately is empty propaganda for me.
Have modding competitions, have things in which you just give people prizes to strive for the best.
Yeah.
Colonius Legacies has been trying to at least follow some semblance of a release schedule. There's a lot of times in which Colonius Legacies has been stagnant in the past and just not released anything. Us getting back up on our feet and releasing a whole bunch of new civilizations in recent time has also coincided with everyone else doing the same thing, because there was a period of about 6 or 7 weeks in which no one released any other civilizations. I mean, there have been some really nice civilization releases. JFD, more civs, and Tarsisia was basically releasing a bunch of really nice civs at that point of time as well. But no one really released any civilizations, and then as soon as we started to get back up on our feet, JFD got jammed back, and now we're just like, all of our stuff is being going under the radar, but we don't really care about that. Essentially, what we've been trying to do is every single Monday, we're trying to release a new civilization using aspects
that... Because we hate that, ourselves.
Pretty much. But we basically decided every Monday that we want to release a new civilization, and hopefully by the end of that week, we can also work on a quarter of a release that's coming up in, say, 2 weeks, and then we basically incrementally work on mods that are coming up in the future and also finishing up mods that we've been working on incrementally in the past. So we first did Cuba, which was a really nice civilization. We talked about that in the modcast before, but we also released Nigeria. And also for Anzac Day, we've just released the World War II Australia alongside more civs, World War II New Zealand.
I wasn't super involved in Nigeria. Cuba was a lot of fun.
quote unquote.
Well, let me just say that I'm surprised that I haven't had droves of everything in that civ is breaking reports, because it's a lot of fandangling. We have these new Lua test any events that allow you to check to see if a given action can be, in fact, undertaken, right? So you can block buildings from being buildable or units from being buildable, and that's all really well and good, but there actually isn't one for improvements. So T-Pan comes to me and says, we've got this great idea. We want an improvement for a rebel camp that you can only build in enemy territory while you're at war. Not possible.
Yeah.
Like, that restriction is simply not possible. There's no test any event for improvement builds.
Hmm.
So there's no way to do that. So what ended up happening, conversing with Last Sword and trying to come up with different ideas, we've actually got behind the scenes, there's a technology that allows you to build these rebel camps that we swap in or out depending on whether or not you're selecting a unit in enemy territory.
That must be pretty taxing on the computer.
Previously, we were switching the unit as you entered enemy territory, but that actually gave us a number of bugs if you embarked the unit across an enemy border. So you were not in their border, and then you embarked into their, or vice versa. The unit would actually clone. You'd have one sitting on the shore and one sitting in the water.
That was fantastic. I loved that.
And there was also a bug where if you could get some bonus movement and then move rapidly through an enemy border, say three tiles, you would leave three clones of yourself. So this would, of course, make Cuba the greatest civ of all time. For that reason, is a fun little royal pain to try to get that all working. Then we've, you know, like you said, we've recently done Nigeria, and we've done World War II Australia, which was fun for me because the morning that we released it, I was in the middle of starting to code the Chimu decisions for the Chimu Civ, which should be out by the time this modcast goes live. In the middle of that, and I was contacting T-Pang saying, so, for the Chimu, what do you want to do with this thing? And he said, nothing, get me World War II Australia, stat.
Yeah. Basically, we kind of coded an entire civilization in, like, 24 hours or so. It was ridiculous, because we realized, oh, man, we should probably do something for Anzac Day alongside, you know, more civs. And we pulled it off, and it was fantastic.
And more civs did give us a little bit of help with that, as I understand.
Pookie said he was going to, but then he pulled out, so Senshi actually picked up a lot of it, and it was basically a godsend that Senshi was able to just commit fully to the project and do that thing. It was great.
So what you're essentially saying is that Pookie is responsible for this happening, but didn't actually do any of the work.
Yeah.
Just got the ball rolling.
Basically did.
So in the Chimu, which is a civ based on South American people who built crazy wonders, we should probably also tease, we've got an upcoming project that I just kind of started collaborating with Firebug, and we're going to be actually adding a First Nations civ.
Yeah, previously, I mean, we've done, I think, seven or so First Nation civs already, with Salish being the eighth, not including Canada. But, yeah, we're adding a new First Nation civ to the Pacific Northwest, more southern Alaskan region, and it's going to be the Tlingit.
This started off with Firebug getting a unit mate, which is slightly a shock to me, because that same art and the same unit I had actually wanted for the Salish, not the same unit. The 3D model is for a rifle unit, whereas the Salish have a slashing spears unit, which would be a pikeman replacement. We'd have to convert the model a little bit, but this model was over there, and I mean, given how much time it can take for a unique unit model to be built, we've been waiting for over a year for the Salish. It would be rather dumb to not use that model. And then Firebug started talking to me and saying, hey, I want to do a collaboration. So we were like, fantastic, we can use this model without having to rip off the person who asked for it, because they were voluntarily wanting to put it into Tlingit mod. The Tlingit are going to be crazy coastal raiders who, the idea of locking down as much coast as you possibly can, and then they have a unique ability that gives them additional trade money if they are sending trade routes, land trade routes, to a landlocked civ.
Yeah.
Edge all the coasts away from the other players in order to make them landlocked.
That's gimmicky as hell, but sounds pretty nice.
Well, in essence, it's more so that we want to promote the playstyle. Like, the unique ability is land trade routes to landlocked civs provide the same yields as if it were a naval trade route.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just gimmicky for the sake of gimmick. It actually has some semblance of historicity to it.
Yeah, but buffing land trade routes is always good in Civ 5.
You should be able to lock down the coasts by either aggressive settling or destroying your enemies and taking their cities away from them.
Yeah. One of the unique improvements is also quite interesting and quite exciting. It's based off the incursion that the Tlingit have with the colonialist Russians when there used to be a thing called Russian America back in yesteryear. We have a unique fort that's being able to be built outside of your territory on coasts and forests that will act as kind of like a fort that can claim tiles inside your own territory, which is quite fun. So yeah, Chimu is probably next, followed by Greenland, followed by another Australian Aboriginal civilization, which is just...
Well, we have a bunch of crazy ideas. If you think that the Tlingit sound gimmicky...
Yeah, if you think we're gimmicky, you haven't seen anything yet.
I'm listening to all those gimmicky ideas, and well, they are unique across the board. But, you know, I'm feeling slightly worse about myself because I'm going to design Burgundy really soon. and it will be pretty basic because it's European.
We're going to have a lot of very diverse and gimmicky teams coming out of Aboriginal Australia, because a lot of the cultures in Australia that came before colonialism have a lot of traits to them that are very unique and different than what you see in most of the rest of the world.
Yeah.
And they don't necessarily mesh perfectly well into me saying, oh, well, this is a science civ, or this is a cultural civ.
Of course, Civ 4 had that disastrous Native American civ, which was just like, oh, God. It gives me nightmares.
And then they sort of did the same thing with, and just named it the Iroquois this time.
A lot of people see the Aboriginal Australians as one cohesive whole, as people who rub sticks together and essentially had boomerangs, and that's all they were. That's the crux of their culture, when people don't realize that there was millions of people in Australia before colonialism, and there was like hundreds of different countries inside, and there was hundreds of different clans, and these people were as diverse and unique as any other peoples around the world. So to look at them as one sort of massive structural, societal structure is completely backwards. A lot of the times we want to be able to represent them in a unique way, because you can't just say it's a science civ, you can't just say it's a production civ, you can't just say it's a monument builder civ, because really their way of life was so different to what civilization kind of is and what it currently represents. So we have to kind of work outside of the box and do gimmicky things, and it works.
We're going to have a lot of highly, highly, highly gimmicky civs that make Cuba look pretty straightforward.
We need to ask ourselves a question. Have we ever come up with a unique ability that lasts only one sentence?
Support the ongoing Polycast Patreon campaign.
Collective achievements.
Personal incentives.
Month-to-month commitment.
For more information, visit thepolycast.net/Patreon.
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659. In Europe, 44121-288-7659.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Mudcast, log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
What if that diplomacy was giving you a city-state quest, otherwise they're going to attack you? Right, if you don't side with us on this war, we're going to come and get you, mate.
Mm-hmm. Yes, there's a lack of branching choices, like you're just saying. So somebody comes to me and says, oh, I think this person's a threat to the world. You say, well, I don't care. They say, well, are you on their side? Because if you don't help us, we'll lump you in with them when we exterminate them.
Mm-hmm.
And then all the civs that agree with this person to fight, they all sign up for that, and you say, yeah, we'll help you. Instead, the trade system says, if you don't help them, now you have three civs jumping on your throat.
Yeah.
Okay. Or if you use a system like in Endless Legend, where you can bribe people to make it actually harder for them to attack you, the populace loves you because you gave them free dye, and now if they declare war on you, they have to suffer a penalty, or vice versa.
EU4.
Yeah.
This is a bit flawed, isn't it, where it says, right, okay, you side with us against this mighty Russia or whatever, and we know that you probably get half of your troops annihilated, but we'll give you some truffles. Yeah, truffles! Well, there we go.
Hey.
We'll give you some oranges as well.
Can we have the pigs too?
Yeah.
We want the chocolate truffles.
All civ leaders confirmed for truffle junkies.
So this has been Modcast 64. Yeah. Thank you for joining us. On the Modcast today was myself, Rob, R8XFT. Joining me was
Jan Borota,
Ivan Golan,
Alf Shard,
Zipidact,
Narai the Forgiven.
Hey, I noticed something. It's Modcast 64. We're on a Nintendo.
That's right. Plays the entire soundtrack with an 8-bit version.
Yes.
Okay. Is it 8-bit Bobby Yeti? That sounds awesome.
Or 16-bit?
Or 64-bit, because it's Modcast 64.
That's right.
Oh, man. Quick wish list. I hope they do 64-bit Civ 6. Oh, my God.
64 Civs on 64 bytes.
64-bit.
Fantastic. Thanks a lot, guys. See you all later.
I had so many occasions, like, I was in art history and I was learning about this painting. I was like, oh, I recognize this guy from Civ.
Yeah. If you don't have any cities, they won't talk to you. Yeah, so that's good.
That's a strategy. That's a trick.
Be a nomadic civilization and they won't talk to you.
Hey, there we go. Selling feature right there. We were talking about trying to give them some sort of balance so there was an incentive to stay nomadic. Now we know what it is.
Yes.
Yeah, don't have to be told.
Splendid isolation.
Also known as the Inuit.
Well, my question is why they haven't hired Jet yet to be their hype guy. But what will happen is then, you know, Civ 6 will be a free-to-play game in which you don't actually play, you just invest in AI bots that fight for ages and ages against each other. Yeah.
And if you want to watch more than 50 turns, you need to pay, like, $4 axis.
So right, in terms of...
There you go.
The ability to have units that can upgrade into different units depending on whether they are in your land. But what if I could upgrade into enemy units based on the enemy technologies that they have researched if I'm in their lands?
Now we're back to the nomadic stealing stuff.
What happens if Civ 6 ships? That's very difficult to say. So if Civ 6 ships with Australia, do you look at it and think... Yeah, exactly. Do you look at it and think, that's great, don't need to do Australia anymore? Or do you think, do you know what, I'm going to do my own version because I think that it should have a different focus?
I'm going to take all credit for it and parade around like some sort of loon, which I already am. But
And you already do.
And I already do. Is that Joseph?
Yes. Yes, that is. I think he's trying to get my attention. You've been on the phone for too long, Daddy.
If that makes any sense. Hope it does. I don't know.
That's generally how communication works.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I've learned that.
One of the things that Yan mentioned that derailed this a little bit is that...
Please do.
Yeah, maybe with limited personalities, maybe a static leader portrait, something like that.
Limited personality.
I'd like that.
Yeah, I know people like that. Sorry. Limited personality.
Yeah. I'm sorry that you know me that well. Anyway.
To go back to the previous topic, which was the best and worst case scenarios, I think for me the
Dan, you have a lot of editing to do, by the way.
Yeah, sorry.
Sorry, Dan.
My girlfriend completely has no idea what the hell happens. Like, she's trying to explain exactly what it is that I do to her father, and she's just like, yeah, he's really popular in niche corners of the internet. He does a lot of nerdy internet shit. I don't really understand it, but just, you know, just go with it.
Yeah.
Okay, it's not verbatim.
I've mentioned earlier in this quite podcast unquote that we have these we're aggressive enough that you should be able to actually lock down
So don't have to go back and say, shit, we've got to make it compatible with events and decisions now.
And that's why there hasn't been enough expansion, because it's cities and development and events and decisions.
No.
Thanks, Sucrit.
You've ruined it for everyone.
Sorry, I made this digress. But then again, it was my turn to do that.
Yeah, we all need to go off in some random tangential narrative every now and again.
Yeah, we do.
And he said, oh man, there's a lot of stack going on at the moment. I'm not sure what's happening. Is that just my own earphones? I don't know.
It's just you.
Okay,
at
cool.
Right, which podcast number is this?
It's not 69 yet.
No.
So, where were we? I mean, that's a lot of rambling that we've just been doing about just kind of stream of consciousness, so I don't know how Dan's going to, like, edit that into some sort of cohesive...
Oh, he will.
...gelatinous pile.
It's floor, so I don't know how to do it this time. He's not used to it.
In Dan we trust.
Record date?
April 30th, 2016.
Civilization 4 and 5 sound clips, copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.